Hello, and welcome to Life Matters, the program where we engage life issues with critical thinking and a biblical worldview. Life Matters is an educational outreach resource of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, Nebraska. We're honored to host a variety of guests within the pro-life movement, each bringing their own unique perspectives, experiences, and backgrounds. The views and opinions expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect those of Life Matters, Assure Women's Center, or our affiliates. Our goal is to foster open, thoughtful dialogue around life-affirming issues and equip listeners to stand for life. This is part two of our interview with Monica Snyder.
Welcome to Life Matters. I'm Toni Clark, Executive Director of Assure Women's Center in Omaha. Today, we're in a multi-week series where we are featuring national organizations engaged in pro-life work across the country. Through this series, we want to step back and take a look at the pro-life movement through a wider lens. While this program airs on Christian radio, the reality is that many of the conversations we have about life happen with people who don't share our faith. In these interviews, we'll be learning from national organizations that approach the life issue from different perspectives, helping us better understand how the case for life is being made in an increasingly secular culture. Today, I'm joined by Monica Snyder. She's the executive director of Secular Pro-Life. Several years ago, I heard Monica speak at a pro-life conference, and her session was incredibly informative. I believe her perspective is especially helpful for Christians who want to engage thoughtfully and effectively with non-Christians on life issues. Monica, welcome to Life Matters. You talked a little bit about moderate pro-choicers. So when it comes to moderate pro-choicers, what distinguishes them from more ideologically committed pro-choice advocates? And why do you think that distinction is important?
That's a really great question. So the more passionate, I would even say pro-abortion people who are really fighting for this, you're going to see more unblinking support of abortion at any stage for any reason. They're not interested in any discussion of fetal personhood. They're not interested in any discussion of what reasons make sense or not. And we want to always try to recognize the best interpretation of our opponents. That'll be their strongest case, the steel man case. And I would say even for these most pro-abortion people, a lot of them, it comes from a place of really wanting to make sure women have control over their bodies and their futures. They believe they are protecting women. That's what they believe. And it's important to recognize that. Because even that, a desire to protect women, that's common ground. Okay. Yeah. But they're going to be much more extreme compared to the average American. They will know more about the issue. Now, it will often be from very much their side's framing. They might not be very familiar with what we think at all, but they'll be more aware of things like current events or what the laws say or different, you know. They represent a slim proportion of pro-choice Americans. The moderate pro-choice person, and there's different versions of this too, but in general, they want to make sure people are safe.
Yeah.
They want to make sure people can access critical medical care. They think that there should be access to abortion for life-threatening situations, for rape, for fatal fetal anomaly. In their minds, these are all really hard situations. We need to leave people alone. But it's not necessarily the case that they think abortion for any reason is fine, or abortion at any stage in pregnancy is fine. And if you get a chance to have an authentic conversation with them, they often do have some hesitations, some limitations, and that's common ground.
Yeah.
And the quest with the moderate pro-choice person is mostly just to get them putting it more front and center in their mind and try to raise their awareness that some of the things they're not comfortable with are actually exceedingly common. And that's just a different kind of conversation than the most passionate pro-abortion person, where you're not going to it's going to be a lot harder to find common ground with them. It's going to be a lot harder to get them to consider what you're saying. So we talk about in the Bridges presentation, the pro-life movement is dramatically under-resourced compared to the pro-abortion side in terms of money, in terms of political capital, in terms of very much in terms of media narratives, all sorts of things. Those are problems. So if you're under-resourced, you want to be very efficient with your resources.
Yeah.
And one of the ways you can be efficient is to focus them on talking to moderate pro-choice people more than the most hardcore devoted pro-abortion. And don't get me wrong, I want the hardcore pro-abortion people to be pro-life too.
Absolutely.
But where are you going to get more sway?
Right.
And so you can think about it in terms of their passion. You can also think about it in terms of your influence. And the reality is we are most influential with the people closest to us.
Yeah.
And then you can imagine concentric circles going out until strangers on the internet.
Right.
Now, strangers on the internet in some ways a lot less scary because if they're mad at you, how does that affect your life? It doesn't.
Right.
Who cares? Right. Whereas when you're talking to your best friend, you really care about that relationship. So you want to be cautious.
Yeah.
So I understand that, but most of us, I think, have moderate pro-choice people we love. And if you don't, that's worth exploring. But that's where you want to be able to talk about this. And your goal in those situations, again, I will say, is not necessarily to get them to talk about it so you can convince them in one discussion that they're wrong and should be pro-life. Yeah. Your goal is to let them know you can talk about it and it's fine.
Yeah.
It's an important issue and we can talk about it. And
absolutely.
You know, explore it together. Truth, two people seeking truth together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But leave the door open for conversation.
Yeah.
You gotta leave the door open. Yeah. You also talk about non-traditional pro-lifers. Who falls into that category? And why is it important for the movement to make space for them as well?
Yeah. So non-traditional is a broad category. It's it's on a sliding scale. Like, so for example, you could have a very devout Catholic who is a hardcore Democrat. I would call them non-traditional.
Okay.
You know, you could have, I'm the opposite. I am pretty conservative, but I'm an atheist. So I call that non-traditional. Just anyone who more deviates from the stereotype the other side has of us. So we say in the presentation, kind of tongue in cheek, the traditional pro-lifer is, I used to be able to rattle off very quickly, white, straight, conservative, old man, you know? And we always say, and this is important, we want all the straight, white, conservative old men to be pro-life and to be donating and volunteering and speaking up and helping.
We
appreciate that.
Yeah.
But the pro-abortion side wants people to believe that if you aren't all of those identifiers, then you don't need to pay attention to us. You don't need to think about what we're saying. Again, it's all about relationship. Who's your tribe? Who's your tribe? They're not your tribe. They're the other team. So you don't have to really think about anything they're saying. Now, that's thoughtless. If we were all perfectly rational creatures, which is a hilarious falsehood, we would just consider what someone's saying regardless of who they are.
Yeah.
But that's not how we work. Yeah. And so it's easier for people to hear a point when it's coming from someone more like them.
Yeah.
And so we already know by the polls that Christians, especially actually practicing Christians, are way more likely to be pro-life, which is great. Good job. But the less religious people are, the less likely they are. We know from the polls that Republicans are more likely to identify as pro-life than Democrats. Now, there's always people in those groups who do identify as pro-life, and we don't want to forget them.
Right.
But they're fighting a real uphill battle.
Mm-hmm.
And we want them to be in those circles and ready to make the case. And they're more likely to be able to do that if they feel like they're not alone.
Yeah.
And secular pro-life has seen over and over again, mostly on the context of atheists, but sometimes other people too. You get this pro-life atheist who is feeling really overwhelmed because the people they are the most close to, the people they love the most, completely disagree with them about this. And in fact, would be appalled if they found out that this person is pro-life. And they just feel like they can't risk that socially. And then they find our group and become friends with us. And just through socialization, not even like training or anything, just like, hey, we hear you, we're with you, we feel the same way.
Well,
we've seen over and over again that it makes people feel like they have someone in their corner and they can do something as simple and as brave as tell their best friend, I actually don't really agree on this.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're doing is more powerful than a million billboards to that person, you know? And so I want what secular pro-life internally, we call it the traditional pro-life movement. Mm-hmm. We want the traditional, larger institutional pro-life movement to be very intentional about emphasizing that we want everyone. We welcome everyone. And in fact, we think you are special and appreciate you for going against your own people in this specific regard. We think it's really important. We think it's brave. We want you to do it more. How can we help you? That's what I want. And tragically, in a lot of what I consider more traditional pro-life spaces, that is not the vibe at all.
Yeah.
It's just not. I think American Christians are actually pretty accustomed to adapting to a secular culture and communicating that way. So it's not usually even the religiosity that is a huge problem. I have thoughts on that. But like, I find people are very open when I say, like, let's open it up a little bit. They're like, yeah, we get what you're saying. They kind of expect it in some way.
Yeah.
It's the politics.
Yeah, I absolutely 100%. Yeah,
yep.
Absolutely. So let's shift to some of the core secular questions around abortion. One of the most common arguments is bodily autonomy. You kind of mentioned it just briefly a minute ago. From a secular standpoint, do bodily rights justify abortion, and why do you think so or not?
So I do think it's important to emphasize that bodily rights are very important, and I don't think we should be glib about that. I think that in most circumstances, bodily rights trump a lot of considerations. I just question the premise that they are supreme and that there's never other considerations that might limit them. Mm-hmm. When we are talking to secular people about this, what I have found to be, I told you, the response I'm trying to get is,
that's a pause.
And so just a pause, just like, mm-hmm. Are you sure?
Yep.
And so what I will often do with moderate pro-choice people, the overwhelming majority of humans on Earth, but especially in particular, we have polls about this for Americans, including mm-hmm. people who consider themselves pro-choice. Mm-hmm. Moderate pro-choice people do not think abortion should be legal at any stage in pregnancy. They usually think it should be mostly the first trimester, right. Maybe even the beginning of the second trimester, but they get real uncomfortable after that.
Yeah.
This is a key that we can use to unlock the door of thinking more about this. And so what I will say in bodily rights conversations is, do you think abortion should be legal at all stages of pregnancy? And most moderate pro-choice people will say, well, no, here's where I think the limit is. I'm like, totally agree. But does that imply that, say they say the limit's 20 weeks, making this up. I think it should be after 20 weeks, you should not have an abortion. Okay. So doesn't that imply that you think a 21-week fetus has a right to use their mother's body? Because, you think it should be limited after. And I totally agree with you. Yeah. I just want to note that there are some circumstances where you think this child has a right to their mother's body. Now, they're not the same as the circumstances I'm saying, right. But it sounds like we agree that bodily rights aren't actually supreme. Mm-hmm. We just disagree on where the limits are. Right. And so I try to bring it back to that, because then I don't have to debate if they're supreme or not. You don't even think they are, man.
Yeah.
So what are we talking about? Now, some people will just bite the bullet and they'll say, no, any stage, any reason. And that's fine, because that gets you into a whole conversation about later abortion, which the vast, vast majority of people have little knowledge of. And secular pro-life actually specializes in this. Yeah. But that's a different topic.
Life Matters is the program where we engage life issues with critical thinking and a biblical worldview, and it is a ministry of Assure Women's Center. God has been faithful to Assure Women's Center for over 40 years, and the story continues. Join us in Omaha on April 2nd, 2026 for Assure's 40th birthday banquet, featuring Tim Tebow as keynote speaker and Rich Bott as our MC. This will be one of the largest pro-life banquets in the country. We hope you'll join us as we remember yesterday and look ahead to how God will transform Assure's future. Learn more at firststeptolife.com.
You're listening to Life Matters. I'm Toni Clark, and today I'm talking with Monica Snyder. Monica is Executive Director of Secular Pro-Life. We've been discussing how understanding secular arguments against abortion can equip Christians to have more effective conversations about life, especially with those who don't share a Christian worldview. Let's continue our conversation. Tell us right now, before I even forget, where can people go to get more information about some of the things that you're sharing? If this is kind of striking their curiosity and they say, I want to dig into this more. How can I, what can
sure.
I say? Where can people reach you?
So secularprolife.org is the overall website. I would particularly recommend our abortion debate index, which is secularprolife.org/index. Mm-hmm. And in specifically what I was just saying, if you are interested in navigating the fraught conversation of later abortion, we have secularprolife.org/later-abortion. And that we have built over years very carefully, because people just can't bring themselves to consider that this is a real phenomenon. Good people. It's a good thing that they have a hard time with this, because they are also horrified by it like we are. Yeah. That's common ground. And so we have very carefully collected a lot of citations. Mm-hmm. From academia, from these clinics' own websites, from all sorts of things, just to try to show the moderate pro-choice person who's willing to consider it, this is a real thing that is happening.
Absolutely. And so I'm sure you address, the thought of embryos and fetuses not being human being or being human beings on there as well. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I believe that on a philosophical level, this is the core of the entire debate. This is everything.
Yeah.
Because, and you will have pro-choice people say, it doesn't matter if the fetus is a person, because no person can use your body against your will. And they will believe it.
Yeah.
But like I just mentioned, a lot of times if you explore that a little bit, they actually think there should be limits.
Yeah.
And what they're not saying, and this is me assigning them motivations, don't ever do this when you're actually talking to someone. Everybody hates that, okay? But I believe that what actually happens is people imagine a blastocyst, a ball of spheres, or they imagine a shrimp-looking little embryo or something, and they just, they're just not feeling it. But then when they start to imagine a later second trimester fetus, that looks like a baby. And now they're not comfortable. And I think what's actually happening is once they recognize this subject as a baby, suddenly they don't care about bodily rights anymore. And that, and we're like, yeah, same. So they'll say it's about bodily rights. And for some people, it really is. Those hardcore, passionate pro-abortion people, they could look right at, you know, a 32-week fetus and be like, it doesn't matter. And that's a different discussion.
Yep.
But if we're talking about the moderate pro-choice people, they say it doesn't matter because of bodily rights, but it's not a coincidence that almost everyone who says it doesn't matter doesn't think the fetus is a person.
Absolutely.
So we try to bring it back to fetal personhood. I do think that's actually the core of the debate.
Mm-hmm.
There's no easy bumper sticker version of that discussion. It's basically about trying to get them to trust you enough to be open and vulnerable about thinking through what they think establishes personhood.
Yeah.
And often just getting them to start discussing it is already a victory. Because the more that we have people imagining and thinking about the embryo and fetus, the more we're softening them to our point. Okay.
Yeah.
The embryo and fetus are almost entirely erased from the pro-choice perspective of this conversation. So just bringing the focus to them is good. Yeah. And so then you try to get them to sort of talk about what they think will be personhood. Be patient with people. Most people have never really talked about this and they're nervous that you're going to yell at them. They might say things that even a day or two later, they'll decide that maybe that's not what they think. We all do this where we sort of try on arguments as we're sort of thinking it through. And you want to give them tons of flexibility to like change their mind. What you don't want to do is make people feel like the only way they can say they changed their mind is to say they were stupid or evil. Okay. If you're like, that's stupid, that's evil, that's stupid, that's evil, then in order for them to back off, they have to first agree with you that they were stupid or evil. Don't do that.
Yeah.
She's like, okay, tell me more. Like, let's think it through together and give them time and give them space. But they'll give you different ideas. A lot of secular people especially will give you ideas based on consciousness, cognitive ability, sentience. They'll use a lot of different vernacular for this.
Yeah.
But it all comes down to the same kind of discussion, which is, what makes you think that that magical point is where you said?
Yeah.
Does that include everyone you want to include in the human family? Does it exclude anyone you didn't mean to exclude? Does it include anyone you didn't mean to include? You know, if you're not a vegan, some of the arguments you're making would protect squirrels more than newborn infants. And maybe you're fine with that, but just like truth seeking together, you know? And so your goal isn't to make them admit that technically this is a human organism at the zygote, you know? It's not. It's to get them to start thinking for themselves, what do they think and why?
Yeah.
Another venue we have found, another path that can be thought-provoking sometimes, it's very delicate. Do it very delicately. But all types of people have grieved their miscarriages. You know, not everyone grieves miscarriage, but all types of people have.
Yeah.
And often they're grieving a loss in the early first trimester, and often it hits them harder than they expect.
That's good.
And that's an area of potential common ground. It doesn't necessarily mean that they think that that was a valuable baby, but they think something. It's not a throwaway clump of cells. It's something.
Right.
And so sometimes we bring it back to that, you know. Also sometimes
they're relating on that human level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, 100% secular people, pro-choice people, all types of people. In fact, some people will get really hurt if you imply that pro-choice people would never grieve a miscarriage. They're like, how could you say that? And they don't understand where you're coming from because to them, that's such an obvious thing to do. Yeah. Don't argue with them about it. Certainly don't yell at them about it, but just be like, talk more about that. You know,
I
want to be very Socratic, like let them find their way with you talking with them.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think it goes back to what you said earlier, just giving them a chance to pause and just say, let me think about that. You know, giving them time to process what you're saying, because you slow down to listen and then respond, and giving them time to think about what you're saying and just pause.
Yeah. So two other points we like to bring up. And so building bridges, the one you saw was our inaugural version. I think I did the whole thing in 60 minutes, which now I don't know how I did that. But We have expanded it now where we do a full day training for groups if they want. Mm-hmm. And two of the other points among infinite things that we say is it's not just a pause within that conversation. If you are in relationship with this person and you know that you're going to be able to talk again later, it's a good idea sometimes, when, especially if it's been an emotionally heavy conversation, mm-hmm. to just let it end there. Mm-hmm. And you can always pick it up again later. A lot of times when people change their minds in a permanent way, the change is happening in between conversations, in the background while they kind of sit with something. It's not when you try to get them to agree right now. So that's the first thing. The other thing is, if you're not, we always want to be checking ourselves if we are hearing them correctly, because it's actually pretty hard to do, especially with something that we care about so much and that we're so used to talking to our side about. So your litmus test is, can you describe their perspective in a way that they say, yep, that's what I'm saying?
Okay.
You should be able to do that. Mm-hmm. If you can't do it, if you try to describe their perspective and they're like, no, it's okay, good. Tell me, where is it getting lost in translation? Because I want to get it right. Not because I agree with you. I don't. But how can I even disagree with you if I don't even know what you're saying?
Right.
You know? So, yeah.
That's good. So another claim is that most or all abortions are medical emergencies. What do you think the data actually shows there?
Oh, that's transparently false. Yeah, definitely not true.
That's a solid though. Oh,
yeah, it's tough though, because moderate pro-choicers don't know this.
Right.
You know, a lot of people don't want to talk about abortion, shockingly. And so they might not have a ton of information. And by far, the kinds of stories you're likely to hear about in the public and the media will be about medical emergencies. So you get this impression. But there's no data to it. The overwhelming majority of abortions are performed with no medical indication mentioned. Even later abortions, that's where people really start to not believe me. But even abortions after 20 weeks, there's no quantifiable data anywhere showing that they're all or even mostly for medical indication.
Yeah. Absolutely. So another myth is that abortion restrictions don't stop abortions.
Yeah, this one I'm more sympathetic to than the medical indication one, because that one is ridiculous. This one, here's what's actually happening. It's a multifaceted problem. And when you look at the accumulation of all the different factors, abortions are still increasing after Dobbs. Yeah. That is true. Far as I know, that's true. I've seen some pro-lifers suggest they don't believe it. But to the best of the knowledge that we have, abortions have either stayed the same or increased even after the overturn of Roe v. Wade.
Yes.
This does not mean that abortion restrictions have no effect. There's a lot of research to show, we have this on our website too, that abortion restrictions decrease abortion in two ways. The first one that everyone thinks of is there are people who they would have gotten an abortion and they don't, and they have a baby. And that's the one we always think of. And that's true. That's true even now after Dobbs.
Yep.
Okay. And the other way, more subtle, is if people anticipate that they might not be able to get an abortion as a backup option, they make more cautious sexual decisions.
Yeah.
And they actually have less unintended pregnancies to begin with.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit more subtle, but there's quite a bit of research suggesting that that's related. Mm-hmm. Now, you still see abortions going up. Why?
Right.
Because to whatever extent abortion restrictions are decreasing abortions in some ways, other changes are increasing them. So for example, when Texas passed the heartbeat law in late 2021, approximately 9 months later, they did research on this. They found that there were something like 10,000 babies born in Texas that you would not have expected to be otherwise. These are people who didn't get abortions related to Texas abortion law.
Yeah.
Yet at the same time, other states have expanded their access. And the biggest, most obvious thing is telehealth abortion pills.
Yep.
And so you may have one person, you know, making this up, right? Betty Sue over here, she got pregnant. She might have gotten an abortion in Texas, but because it was restricted, she had a baby. But at the same time, you know, Mary on the other side, she actually might not have, and then she ordered pills instead. It's multifactorial.
Right. Right.
So all this to say, when you control for other variables and you look at abortion laws, they do mean that people who would have gotten abortions don't get them. And they do mean that people who would have gotten pregnant avoid pregnancy.
Yeah.
Those are both true. Mm-hmm. But that's not so overwhelming of an effect that it erases all the other things going on.
Right, right. Good. You have, you've given me a lot of things to think about and a lot of perspectives and how to put things in words. Obviously, it would take me a lot of time to get to where you are, which I love chit-chatting with you. But if someone wanted to learn more, go deeper into this approach, tell us again where they can get started.
Secularprolife.org/index is the best place to start. Even just the table of contents is huge, and it just divides it out into things pro-choice people often say, and then our content responding to it. And of course, anything that's linked on there will not have a religious component to the argument. So if you're trying to find a secular way to say something, that's where you go.
Good. Is there any last thoughts or comments you'd like to leave with our listeners today?
So the third part of our mission is coalition building, and you inviting me to talk about this with your listeners is coalition building. And so I just want to say thank you for doing that, because I think it's really important.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. All right. So thank you so much for joining us today and for sharing your insight and expertise. This conversation has been a wonderful reminder that truth and compassion can be communicated in many ways, and that understanding secular arguments can strengthen our ability to defend life in a diverse world. For our listeners, if you or someone you know is struggling with a pregnancy decision, please know that help and hope are available through Assure Women's Center. So Monica, once again, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you again for having me. I love talking to you.
All right. I look forward to seeing you one of these days in person again.
Life Matters is an educational outreach resource of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, Nebraska. To learn more about the ministry of Assure, visit firststeptolife.com. That's firststeptolife.com. There you can learn about the many services we provide, including how we come alongside abortion-minded mothers and empower women to choose life for her and her baby, as well as find our most current broadcasts and all of our past episodes. God has been faithful to Assure Women's Center for over 40 years, and the story continues. Join us in Omaha on April 2nd, 2026 for Assure's 40th birthday banquet, featuring Tim Tebow as keynote speaker and Rich Bott as our MC. This will be one of the largest pro-life banquets in the country. We hope you'll join us as we remember yesterday and look ahead to how God will transform Assure's future. Learn more at firststeptolife.com. Thanks for listening to Life Matters. Join us again next week at the same time right here on Bott Radio Network.